RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Now to the reporting policy for firearms and new authoritarian policing for firearms owners. Joining us on RCR is Hugh Devereux-Mack, public spokesperson for CULFO, the Council of Licensed Firearms Owners. Hugh is the public face of CULFO, representing the interests of firearms owners, the largest voluntary shooting-related organisation in New Zealand. CULFO was set up in 1996 by a number of interested individuals and groups to combat firearms-related disinformation. CULFO takes a professional approach using sound research to dispel the inaccurate and emotive claims of self-proclaimed anti-gun experts. It's seen as a parental organisation to smaller firearm-adjacent associations like the Sporting Shooters Association of New Zealand, for example. Hugh is an avid hunter and fan of poetry. He currently works in cybersecurity when he isn't managing CULFO affairs. Hugh, welcome to RCR. How are you?
I am very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks for asking. So first I want to talk about the issue I just mentioned, but also get on to Nob Oddy, who the police have visited recently. People online would have seen maybe a video of that. We'll get to that shortly. Now, the president of the Sporting Shooters Association of New Zealand, Thomas Hemphill, Hugh, has refuted statements made by Abdul Raziz Khan from the Federation of Islamic Associations. Khan criticized the government for not enforcing mandatory reporting of firearm injuries by health professionals, and he suggested it could have prevented the 15th March shootings. And Thomas Hemphill responded by clarifying that it's already illegal under the 83 Arms Act not to report firearm injuries. And he denied that any firearms group lobbied against this regulation. And he also questioned whether reporting the terrorist's accidental injury, apparently the terrorist, Tarrant, had some sort of accidental injury, and if that had been reported, would have changed the outcome. Thomas Hemphill responded by clarifying that it's already illegal under the 83 Arms Act not to report firearm injuries, and he denied that any firearms group lobbied against this regulation, and he cited police inaction. A bit of a long intro, I know, but we had to set the table. Okay, so what is your organization's opposition to this reporting policy? Is it even necessary in your mind?
Look, the Council of Licensed Firearms Owners have never actually opposed the idea of compulsory reporting of firearms injuries to police, but that isn't really our role at all. This is a question for the Medical Association and the Ministry of Health, because the question is it going to provide any additional public safety? And do medical practitioners have time to report these things? If the answer is yes, then fine, go for it. There's no reason not to report them other than it's just placing additional burden on medical practitioners.
Yeah, but if someone comes to the practice with firearms injuries, it's kind of serious, isn't it? I mean, it is.
Oh, absolutely. And honestly, we would actually not mind the reporting because that would give us better information around the injury rates that occur on ranges. I know that the most recent information we have is that only 19 injuries were caused by accidental shooting incidents on ranges since 1987. Now, 15 of those occurred on pistol ranges, which were fully compliant with police regulations before the recent law changes, and 4 of them involved military and police. So when it comes to reporting these injuries, they're relatively rare. And so when it regards to the sporting side of things, I think they should possibly be reported. But again, this is down to the medical associations to figure out if that's something they want to take on board.
Anyway, as I mentioned earlier, it's already illegal, isn't it, under the 83 Firearms Act, not to report firearms injuries?
Yes, I think it is. The interesting one was when we looked at the criminal shooting rates since the year 2000 to 2015, there were 108 total fatal shooting incidents done by criminals. Unfortunately, when it comes to the largest crime rate is within our community is actually suicide.
Yeah.
And that points to a whole range of issues around predominantly male suicide rates that need to be addressed with mental health support and things like that. But they accounted for 707 of them. It is already, you have to report shooting incidents. It's just, again, do the medical practitioners need to bring these on? As licensed firearms owners, they need to be reported through us anyway, and we obey the law.
The Federation of Islamic Organizations, as you heard me say earlier, they believe that mandatory reporting of firearms injuries could have prevented the mosque attacks. Do you think so?
That's a bit of a stretch, really. The thing that would have prevented the mosque shooting was proper vetting by police, which was not undertaken, that would have meant the individual would not have been granted a firearms license. Or what also would have possibly helped is if they'd done a little bit of investigation, because police also signed off on his mail order form for his ammunition purchase. So it's a bit of a red herring to say that, yes, the fact that he was injured as a result of a shooting sport would have prevented it. There's nothing to say that that would have led to a license revocation and his firearms being seized, because accidents, although rare, do happen. And that doesn't point to your fit and proper status as a licensed firearms owner. It can be a red flag for it, but this guy had red flags all over him and he was still granted a firearms license.
Do you have any thoughts as to why that could have happened? Was it incompetence? Loose application of professional standards? A lot of people have been scratching their heads over that for quite some time.
Yeah, so I think what's important to remember is New Zealand had the best firearms license laws in the world prior to 2019 and the changes that were made. What happened was police failed in their duty to administer the Arms Act and their responsibilities under it, which granted this guy a license regarding the vetting. So the biggest one was in order to get a firearms license, you have to have your referees, as in people who've known you for a significant period of time and can speak to your character, interviewed. Rather than having that done, people that were interviewed on behalf of the terrorist knew him from online forums and gaming. Now, those shouldn't have ever been considered appropriate references.
Yeah.
Now, when we think about why this happened, it was reported at the time that a special or select committee that was chaired by Jacinda Ardern before she was prime minister and against the recommendations of COLFO and police voted to make budget cuts to police that would weaken the vetting process as well as the firearms license process overall. I can look up, or actually I think most people can look it up. It was a Stuff article that was reported once, but quite quickly drowned after her response to the terrorist attack occurred.
Yeah.
What we were told was it was a requirement of budget cuts. So instead of doing in-person interviews, they were then allowed to do them via Zoom call instead, and a centralization of the vetting and sort of armed services, which now predominantly happen out of Wellington. So budget cuts, I think, were part of it. And Jacinda Ardern was part of that process of weakening our gun laws prior to the 2019 attacks.
There's a kind of, sad irony in that, because as you've pointed out, she was involved in what you just described. But then on the other hand, she kind of became some sort of rock star politician globally on the back of the aftermath of that attack.
Yeah, absolutely. Like when you search Jacinda Ardern and firearms laws in New Zealand, all that comes up is the love, the kindness, the photos in hijabs. And I'm not saying that that was a bad response, because it was what was needed at the time. However, it was also drowning out the fact that she played a part in the weakening of the laws. The fact that that tragedy was then politicized to rush through firearms law changes within a week before the bodies were in the ground, I think was the biggest sort of, the shortcutting and undermining of a democratic process of lawmaking. In New Zealand, we make laws based on evidence. We don't make them on feelings. And that was exactly what happened after the terror attack, which is also ironic considering the complaints we're hearing now from Gun Control New Zealand, FIANS and others around a lack of proper consultation. when consultation happened last time in 2019, we had 24 hours to consult. And over the weekend, apparently they read over 3,000 submissions, considered them fully, and then completely ignored them because, well, I guess it was political at that point.
How is that possible?
It would show a efficiency level in government that has yet to be seen anywhere and has never been replicated since, if it was genuinely undertaken. They were also very strict on the spoken word ones, with, I think it was Deborah Russell at the time, almost gleefully cutting off people who were making submissions and went over time by a couple of seconds, just cutting the microphone and saying, look, that's your time, you're done. So when it comes to making a fair process, the fact that they're criticizing the current Minister Nicole McKee for shortcutting a process, which we can get into in just a sec, it seems like they only care about a fair process when it benefits them. And when it actually is a fair process that might lead to better laws that they don't like, that's when they cry foul, which is ridiculous.
Some people say, and given the time involved that you've just pointed out, that all that was kind of locked and loaded, ready to go. Forgive the pun.
Yeah, we have heard that before. And I mean, when you look at the piecemeal way that those laws were put into place, you could go either that, yes, it was locked and loaded and the ideas were there. The legislation seems to have been relatively badly drafted. And we've seen the impact of that, that the idea was the firearms law changes, the register, the buyback, all the rest would reduce gun crime in New Zealand and keep us safe. Well, in the years since that has happened, gun crime has continued to rise. Criminals have continued to ignore the rules and licensed firearms owners have continued to obey them. Had we, I don't know, waited until the Royal Commission report was actually out and then we understood the failures in the system that led to the horrible Christchurch terror attack, perhaps then we could have made laws that would prevent a future one. As it stands, the politicization of that tragedy and the laws that came in as a result haven't made us any safer, which is why the new review of the Arms Act and those changes that were rushed through is so important to making sure we get good gun laws that actually keep us safe.
I don't want to get too hung up on this, but something's come to mind. So the buyback of firearms came after the attack, and it targeted or involved law-abiding registered firearms owners. But it seems, and I think we're all aware of this, and you've pointed it out, that gun crime has really escalated in the hands of criminals. And I guess any sensible person would ask the question, surely in a program like that, you would go after unregistered, non-law-abiding gun possessors or target people with, you know, really clearly transmitted off the planet, potentially very harmful views, who could pull some sort of stunt or create a tragedy or even a massacre like the March 15th mosque attack in Christchurch, but also use weapons in the street in crime.
I think the perfect example was that was in the aftermath of the March terror attack, was the mongrel mob spokesperson was asked whether they would be complying with the buyback and giving their firearms up. Their response was that they should be trusted because they only used their firearms, which were all illegal and still are illegal, upon each other and not innocent civilians as the terrorist had. Now, the fact that we were supposed to trust a criminal organization more than we were being asked to trust licensed firearms owners that had been properly vetted, had had their mental health checks, they're interviewed with independent references, and had their homes and their safety storage requirements checked. The fact that that wasn't an issue, but we were supposed to trust the criminals, I think was one of the most outrageous things New Zealand has been asked to do. And of course, they didn't apply the law. Being a criminal, by job description, is they were never going to comply. And so, of course, crime rates haven't gone down as a result of this because they weren't affected.
Now I want to get to the case of Nob Oddy. Police showed up at his doorstep to question him over some online comments of his that were reported to the Firearms Safety Authority. What do you know about this?
So recently there's been a social media post that was put online where an individual had, on an anonymous parody account, had posted some things, and he received police at his door in the morning questioning about it and saying that those could result in him no longer being deemed fit and proper to hold a firearms license. That fit and proper status needs to be codified, and our belief is the only thing that discounts you from that is a criminal conviction.
So now here in New Zealand, police are turning up at doorsteps after making, well, what they could only have subjectively judged were some kind of threat. What are your thoughts on that?
I think you've hit the nail on the head with that term, subjectively judged. And that is because at the moment, to own and use firearms legally, you have to be deemed fit and proper. We have a system in New Zealand where police have, over time, become the judge, juries, and executioners of the rule, of the law. So what we need is a separation of powers between the enforcement and the administration, which is starting with the Firearm Safety Authority being separated and moved to a new department soon. However, that fit and proper term really needs to be explored and codified, because if someone, as recently has been demonstrated, has a parody account on social media, whether it's anonymous or not, we know nothing you put on the internet is actually anonymous. Given enough time, police will find you if they need to. But the idea that if you post something on your social media, that someone, based on their judgment, no clear, transparent rules, says, I think this is a problem, that can lead to your firearms license being seized. I don't think that is ever appropriate, and no New Zealander should be able to accept that a joke on social media is enough for you to be treated like a criminal. We see these cases quite regularly with police overstepping their powers, coming through and treating law-abiding people as though they have committed a crime and revoking firearms licenses. Our view as COLFO is that the only reason a firearms license should be revoked or denied is because you have been committed is because you've been convicted of a crime by a judge and jury. Outside of that, every individual in New Zealand should be considered fit and proper to carry a firearms license as long as they've passed the other checks like the vetting and the criminal background checks and all the rest of it.
On the other hand, though, we've got to stay real. If someone was going nuts online, threatening to, you know, take their gun and go out and, I don't know, put the world to right, then there probably is justification for police turning up and making a visit. Though in the cases that I've seen, and there have been a few of these videos over the last few years that I've seen, that threshold looks not to have been met. And a police visit like that in the neighborhood is not good. People are going to be fearful. They're going to talk.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like in New Zealand, since when have we agreed that it's okay to punish people legally? And I'm not saying social consequences, because, well, freedom of speech isn't freedom from consequences. People can say, I don't like that, and therefore, as an individual, I will criticize you, protest you, whatever. That's part of the game of having free speech. But where that ends is when the state can step in and punish you in a way that, I don't know, prevents you being able to pest control on your farm, or prevents you from being able to harvest meat for your family and feed them. Those are real life consequences that the state imposes rather than individual consequences that people can put on you. I think that's just inappropriate.
Because if the police are subjectively judging people in this way, their comments, which could even just be a joke, and there are plenty of examples of that, and link firearms ownership or possession with it, then it's some kind of quasi way of enforcing, well, kind of a hate speech sort of law, right?
No, and we have limitations on free speech already. For example, you can't go out and threaten to kill someone. Like, no licensed firearms owner would do that,
as I'm aware. No regular person should be making those sort of posts. That would be concerning because that's a direct threat to violence. In the same way that you can't sort of incite panic by screaming fire in a crowded mall or whatever else. Like, there are limits to those free speeches.
But from what we've seen of the times that police have been called to houses and then had firearms licenses revoked or just been intimidated, I don't know how many people will ever experience police turning up armed to their house with pistols on their hip or long arms in full uniform, but it's quite an intimidating experience. They then say, we just want to have a conversation with you. But any conversation that is backed up with firearms is not, it's not a consensual conversation. Our advice is, if that should happen to anyone, the first thing you should do is be polite always, because as licensed firearms owners, we do obey the law. And often the police officers who are delivering the message are doing it on behalf of powers that are above them, the organization itself. Record everything. Don't speak off camera. And of course, ask for your lawyer. The reason we think this is, we see reports coming out of police quite often that the trust and confidence is on the climb, and licensed firearms owners really trust police. Now, what they exclude from those pieces is the fact that they only ask people who've recently attained their firearms license. They have never, even though they have the ability to, asked all licensed firearms owners. The recent COLFO Trust and Confidence Survey, which we conducted at the end of 2023, found that trust in police to fairly balance the promotion and possession and use of firearms without the need to impose controls on unlawful activities scored 1.3 out of 10. And more significantly, police administering the act without personal bias scored an average of 1.6 out of 10. Licensed firearms owners, regardless of what the Firearm Safety Authority or police say, do not trust the police. And incidents like this recent one with the Nob Oddie account are exactly why.
Hugh Devereaux-Mack, public spokesperson of COLFO, the Council of Licensed Firearm Owners. Thanks for coming on RCR, Hugh.
No, thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to let people know what firearms license owners are going through and the opportunity to speak.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.